Hello, and welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast. This is our third episode. I'm sorry it's a little belated. I've been really busy and have not been able to record another episode, but I'm here today to remedy that. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about some summer TV. I'm here with my friend Taylor Gaines. I've written a little bit for his blog, and we talk a lot about movies and TV and pop culture stuff. Together, so we thought it'd be fun to do one of these together and kind of talk about some of the summer TV stuff that we're watching. So, Taylor, you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I've had my blog called citizengains.wordpress.
Clever name.
Had that for a couple of years. I've been a little on and off with it, especially recently, because I think I've decided I'm going to shift into full just TV mode, because I watch so much TV that I'm just going to... I've been trying to catch up on everything, man. I'm watching every night. There's a different show. I mean, just
but that's a good thing, right?
It's a good thing because there's good stuff. It's not crap. I'm watching good stuff. I mean, even just on Sundays, True Detective and Halt and Catch Fire and Humans and John Oliver. Just every night, there's so much good stuff.
Okay, well, let's jump into talking about. We're going to talk about two shows that are back. Halt and Catch Fire started last summer with its first season, and it's back this year with its second season, which, I mean, we've noticed that it's improved in quality, but we were kind of turned on to it by a lot of, you know, television critics being like, you should give this show another look, because they really tried something different, and they kind of put the female characters into the focus, and they're kind of the leads of the show now. So how do you feel kind of about what's been going on in the second season of Halt and Catch Fire?
Yeah,
let's start there.
I mean, this was a show, I'll back up real quick.
Yeah.
Like, this was a show that I didn't even give a chance last year, because I read enough about it to know that I probably, like, it didn't sound like it was worth the time. Like, I just was watching so much stuff and trying to catch up on so many things that I hadn't seen from, like, years past, you know? Just the Mad Men's and Breaking Bad's and, like, all the old classics, and I was like, I'm not gonna invest in this another AMC show that looks like it could be the next Low Winter Sun instead of the next Mad Men. But when these reviews for the second season started coming in, I just said, you know, I'm gonna give it a shot, I guess, and I just watched the first 10 on Netflix. It was pretty quick, and then the second season started pretty soon after, and it's a noticeable increase in quality. I really like the direction it's gone. I think that pretty much every episode this season has been better than the episodes last season. I don't know where you're at on this. I've really enjoyed it. I think it's really good.
Yeah, just to talk a little bit about what this show is, if you're not watching it, it's an AMC show. It comes on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. We're about, I think last night was the seventh episode of the second season, and I think they're doing 10 a season, so we have about 3 to go. I actually watched the entire first season live as it was airing, because it was summer, I had a lot of free time last summer, and I was just kind of enjoying having some appointment viewing to kind of come to every Sunday. I don't get HBO, so a lot of Sunday night stuff for me is usually, you know, whatever is on FX. I tried to watch The Strain, which was a Sunday show last summer, and I gave up on that about 8 episodes in, but I really enjoyed Halt and Catch Fire. It had a lot of flaws, but I kind of still just kept with it, hoping that, you know, it would either improve or, you know, maybe in the future the seasons would sort of build and it would become something. And that seems to be kind of slowly happening. The show is about, how would you describe this show? It's in the 80s, but
it's basically 1980s when computers and internet and, like, all that is exploding, like Apple and IBM.
Yeah, they constantly mention Apple, they constantly mention IBM.
Which I want to get back to in a minute, something about that, but it's basically a young-ish group of people who are trying to make cool technology and computers, and they invented the chat room this season, basically.
Yeah, it seems like the sort of irony of what they're doing on the show is seeing how far technology's come, and, like, the episode, I think last week's episode, they mentioned broadband, and that kind of gets a chuckle because, you know, we're all so connected to the internet now, and it's just, like, every time they make a new discovery that seems so new to them, and for us, it's just, that stuff has been around for years, so that's kind of interesting, and kind of makes it's almost like Mad Men in that sense, where Mad Men would kind of drop in these cultural references from the time period. It's a very different show from Mad Men, but it's similar in that way. It kind of is doing for the 80s what Mad Men did for the 70s, where you look back And you're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Like, our lives are so different now. But
speaking of Mad Men, did you get the sense, because this is what I was thinking when I first started kind of binge-watching it a couple months ago, was it really felt like AMC thought, okay, Mad Men and Breaking Bad are over. How could we keep Walter White and Don Draper on our channel? Because at the beginning, Joe McMillan is basically Don Draper, where he's like, the man with secrets who makes good speeches and gets people to follow him. And then Gordon, which Joe is played by Lee Pace, who Guardians of the Galaxy.
And The Hobbit.
The Hobbit, yeah. And then Scoot McNairy is Gordon.
He was one of the hostages in Argo.
Oh, okay.
Ben Affleck's Argo. And so was the Carrie Bechet. Who plays his wife Donna on this show. They were both in Argo together.
So they have Gordon, who's... So they have Joe, who's basically Don Draper, and then Gordon, who's basically Walter White, where he's like, you know, he's just going to his day job, and, like, he's bored, and then he's like, oh, wait, we can do something semi-illegal, and, like...
Yeah.
And it just felt really reverse-engineered at first, where I was kind of like, ugh. I was, like, a little queasy on it, but then the fact of the matter is that the Carrie Bechet as Donna, and then the Canadian actor,
Mackenzie Davis,
who plays the other lead female, Cameron, who's basically the hothead programmer who they bring on to help with the company. But the two women are really the best part of the show, I think. And
yeah, and I kind of think maybe they always were, and that the creators didn't really get that at first, and they thought, oh, we have to have these white male protagonists that have these traits that we've seen before in other shows, other better shows.
That's what's cool about this show, I think, is the fact that they really seem to realize the strengths and the weaknesses of it, and instead of... I mean, I think they're still there. I think the same strengths and weaknesses are still there.
It definitely
still has some flaws. Like, they've really done a good job of accentuating things in the right way, where it's not as... debilitating or as frustrating.
Yeah, it's not as much... The flaws are easier to overlook because there is so much there that's better now. But, yeah, I mean, basically the first season you have this whole plot about Joe coming to this company, Cardiff Electric. Gordon already works there. They bring in Gordon's wife and they bring in Cameron and all those characters come together and they basically create a computer, a new computer that's faster and... can talk back to you, and they're trying to compete with these big-name companies. Basically, everything about what they did in the first season has absolutely no relevance in the second season, which is really interesting.
Other than maybe the relationships
between the characters.
Right, just knowing the past between Joe and pretty much everyone else.
But the company, Cardiff Electric, that they work for in the first season isn't even a part of the second season. It's in there for, like, half of an episode, and... They don't mention it too much, and it's kind of just an entirely new plot now, where Donna and Cameron have sort of come together, and they're working for an online community/gaming community that they have developed called Mutiny. And it's really interesting, because it is, like Taylor said earlier, we're kind of getting into, like, they basically invent a chat room at one point, and they're like, Cameron kind of thinks it's stupid, and Donna's like, no, I think people will find this really cool. You can just talk to your friends, like, online. You don't have to be in the same room. And so there's all these little things that they're kind of building towards, but what do you think some of those weaknesses are still with the show?
Well, first of all, Joe McMillan, I think, is my biggest weakness in general, which I'll get to.
The character, though?
I'll get to that in a second, but I wanted to bring this up because you just mentioned the chat room. One of the, I guess it's weaknesses, or it's at least kind of hanging over the show always, is the fact that Apple and IBM and all the real world companies are very much like a part of this universe and this show. And I wonder if that's going to help the show or hurt the show, because it could effectively shoot them in the foot if you know that they're never really going to make it, because if they're in that universe, they can't, because Apple or IBM, those are the ones that are going to do it. Like, Nintendo's going to be the one who advances gaming before they do. And I just wonder sometimes, like, is each season going to be, you know, here's our new great idea, and then just, like, ends in failure? Because they can't really make it based off of the way they set it up. So that's something I think about. I think I think Joe, the character, bothers me more than anything else on the show a lot of times. I think they've done some good damage control this season. I think Lee Pays is good. I think he's very good.
Do you think
good.
That it's just the problem is that they just don't know what to do with that character and how to make that character more... I mean, because that guy was kind of a dick in the first season. And that was pretty much all there was to him, was just him kind of controlling
there was all
people
the,
and being a dick.
There was all the, oh, Joe has a dark past, and, like, he has
secrets.
Yeah, but
what did we actually learn about that, though? Anything interesting?
That he had a homosexual relationship before or something?
I guess.
Like, I don't know, but the way... Basically, they set it up where, like, he's a man of mystery, and, like, you have to find that interesting. And now, like, I think it's funny, and a few people mentioned this in their reviews of it, but one of the early episodes, Donna basically says something to the effect of, I'm just not interested in tall, dark-haired mannequins
yeah,
with,
I remember that.
With delusions of grandeur or whatever it was. And it was almost like the show was, like, admitting, like, yeah, we gave you one of those, like, characters.
Right.
And,
like a Don Draper or
and
like
it didn't
a
really
Tony
work.
Soprano or, like, any of these sort of things
right.
that kind of become the tired tropes.
And they really have... I mean, I always think Lee Pace has been good. Like, he's an interesting actor.
Yeah, he's
definitely
an interesting actor, I think.
He's a good person to deliver those weird speeches that Joe has to do. But, like, you know, every time Joe stops and is like... The future is in ink cartridges, or whatever the hell he
right.
wants to talk about. I'm just like, oh, here we go. But I really think, like, last night, I think he had one of his best moments as a character when he finally told Cameron, like, listen, like, you're gonna be screwed over if you do what I told you to do, and you shouldn't take the deal, etc. And it was one of the stronger moments with him, and I think that. Potentially he could be off the show now. I don't know anything about Lee Pace's contract or
yeah, we should
like
say
that,
spoilers.
But...
But yeah, that was a really interesting part of last night's episode. I think this show is good. I look forward to watching it. It's not perfect, but I find myself just really enjoying it. I think especially last week's episode from last Sunday, that was like a really well-directed episode, and there was sort of some more like art to talk about with the way some things were shot. And
the ending to that week's episode was basically the epitome of kind of my difficulty with the show.
Yeah,
because,
the annoying parts of the show.
Well, because it had that moment where Donna comes home and is on the phone with Gordon and her daughters after she went and had the abortion, we're assuming, obviously.
Yeah, they allude to that she maybe had an abortion.
And they basically need her to sing to them so they can go to sleep. And it was, like, this great emotional moment and, like, a great scene for Carrie Bechet. And even Scoot McNairy had some good stuff in that
yeah.
scene because he had a nice little arc on that episode where you kind of see how it's affecting him to have to listen to his wife sing to them and all that. And like, it just was this great, like, powerful emotional moment. And then it cuts back to, like, Joe McMillan in the office, and he's just like, broadband, we're gonna invent broadband, or whatever. And it was just like, it was the epitome of everything I liked about the show and everything I didn't like about the show, just in the ending of it.
This is something I think, I'm hoping that they get another season, and I'm hoping that each season keeps improving. AMC, for the most part, is pretty good about knowing when to quit, I think. You know,
unless it's The Walking Dead.
Well, yeah, The Walking Dead is a different story.
Which they don't need to quit because they're making a lot of money off
right.
of it.
Right. But, you know, I think I started watching this show last summer thinking, oh, it's an AMC show. There's a lot of potential there. Like, it'll probably be good. And I think I maybe just watched it just kind of just almost in a way to be stubborn. Like, by me watching it, it would somehow become good. And it really never became great, but I do think this season is kind of flirting with greatness a little bit. So, I mean, we recommend it. I think we're both really enjoying it.
It's definitely
the first season is up on Netflix in its entirety. It's 10 episodes. We're 7 episodes into the second season, but it's pretty terrific, and I'm really interested in seeing where it goes.
Yeah, there's been a lot of shows that I've watched this summer catching up on stuff and watching new stuff, and this is one of the few ones... At this point, it's a short list of shows, like, we'll talk about one of them later on, but it's a short list of shows that I watch and I'm like happy to be watching. It's not a slog. It feels like the time flies by when you're watching it. It's really good.
I agree. So moving on to a show that I think we both are pretty bananas about.
This is my favorite show.
We're pretty up on. I don't know if it's my favorite show, but I do find it just to be astonishing at times, and I just don't even really know. I bring it up to people, and they're just like, I can't watch that show, it's gross. We're talking about Hannibal, which is in its third season on NBC, its third and potentially final season, which is probably something we're going to get to at the end of this little Hannibal discussion. So this third season has kind of taken a pretty different turn. I think the first season had a lot of procedural kind of elements to it, and there were a lot of weird crimes they were solving. People growing, like, mushrooms out of their bodies and weird stuff like that. And then the second season was pretty interesting, had a much clearer arc for the season overall, but still had a couple of episodes in sprinkled in between that were sort of procedural elements. But this third season, I mean, we had a huge cliffhanger at the end of the second season, and then they basically pick up right where we left off. And the third season, basically, we find Hannibal in Europe, and, you know, Will goes after him, and so far, I mean, quite honestly, nothing has really happened in this third season, and we're, like, I think 6 episodes in.
So I think, in summation, if people aren't familiar with the mythology or with the show, because obviously there's a lot of people who are just familiar with the books and the movies and all that, but basically the first season is Will and the FBI, Will Graham, who I believe he works for the FBI in the first season, right?
Yeah, he's like a profiler / instructor for the FBI.
Right. So the first season is him and Jack Crawford, the director or whatever he is. He's an important person in the FBI.
Yeah, I guess I don't really know his role, but he's
but basically the first
season,
the first season is them trying to find the serial killer and not realizing it's Hannibal ever.
Yeah, basically.
But also, Will has this ability where he can, like, visualize the crimes as the killer, and so he ends up having to go see a psychiatrist, which turns out to be Hannibal Lecter, and basically Hannibal just mutates him and plays him, and, I mean, by the end of it, that was one of my favorite arcs of any show, the way that it all came together at the end, the way they kind of tied in all the procedural things to make it all, like, this larger picture. I guess that's not very spoilery of a description, but effectively, him and Hannibal are close by the end of it, and then the second season, well, isn't Will arrested at the end of the first season? I don't even remember.
Will's arrested.
The second season, he's in jail, because they think he's the killer. And
right,
the first half of the season is basically him getting out of jail, and then the second half of the season is him trying to catch Hannibal, because they realize it's Hannibal at that point. I think they realize it's Hannibal by the end of the first season, at least Will does. And then the second season is them trying to catch him, and it ends with that massacre. Well, I guess not really a massacre in the end.
Yeah, that was weird because, we all thought that pretty much everyone was either going to turn up dead or, like, severely injured, and it turns out that they all lived except for, I guess, Abigail's the only one who actually died.
Which even they pretended she was alive for a couple minutes.
So essentially, the first season, for those who aren't really familiar, like, this mythology is detailed in, I think there are like 4 or 5 novels, and then they've made some feature films, but this is the showrunner and creator of the TV version, Brian Fuller. This is sort of his reimagining of the mythology of Hannibal Lecter, and it's a great show. It's really good, and this third season, they kind of, after where we thought everyone was going to be dead at the end of the second season, they've completely shifted even the tone a little bit. It's weirder, it's darker, it's more artsy and pretentious than it ever has been. And I honestly think it's probably the best version of the show that we've gotten so far.
I love every version of
it. I think it's the strongest for me. Like, it's just, it's weird, it's fascinating. You can't take your eyes off the screen.
This has, like, always been a show where it's nice to know what's happening, but you don't really even need to know what's happening, because you basically spend 42 minutes just in a trance. It's just so dreamy, and, like, I mean, this season in particular, but it's just so, like, intoxicating, almost, that you're basically Will Graham under Hannibal's spell when you're watching it. It's just something that is unlike anything else on TV. And
that's for sure.
And it's on NBC, no less, which blows my mind that it made it three
seasons.
That still
blows my mind. I mean,
the
gore on this show, the gore on this show is, I think it's unprecedented for a broadcast network.
There was even
I've never seen anything like what they show on this
there
show.
There was a sex joke in last week's episode that I couldn't believe was on television. There was
filthy
a
filthy joke.
There was a kaleidoscope sex scene this week that was
between two women.
One of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
But but kind of amazing. Like it's funny. It sounds like we're almost making fun of it, but it's just like
no. It's fantastic. I love it.
It's great. And I love that Brian Fuller just kind of owns up to the fact. He's like, he just tells all the directors that come in, like, we're making a pretentious art show. And by kind of aping and like a pretentious art show, it kind of itself becomes its own kind of art show. It's fascinating. The performances are great. I think this season is really great. It seems like, I don't want to spoil anything, but you said you didn't watch the Comic-Con reel that they just basically dropped and said, like, here's what the rest of the season is going to look like. I won't say too much about that, but they're basically going to introduce an entirely new story and an entirely new arc for the latter half of the season.
Which is interesting.
So it's almost like we're going to get two seasons in one.
Because they basically did that last season, too. They had the courtroom drama first half of the season, and then the...
That is true, yeah.
Like, Will trying to get in Hannibal's head for the second half of the season. And, yeah, so let's get spoilery up to the point of last week's episode, because after a few weeks... a few weeks of, like, kind of nothing really happening, like, I think last week's episode, I think it was... Episode 5 was the most filler-ish episode of the show that they've probably ever done, I think. Where
the one where it ends with Jack beating up Hannibal.
Yeah, and then, like, letting him go.
Yeah.
It was, because the whole episode kind of felt like, alright, we're not ready for Will to catch him yet, but, like, Will has to be the one who catches him or whatever, and it was still an entertaining episode, and, like, watching Jack beat the hell out of Hannibal was awesome, but... It was kind of getting to the point where it was like, all right, they have to catch him next episode or else this is going to start dragging a little bit. So then that's why I want to talk about this episode, because the ending was like, I mean, obviously they don't tell you how Will and Hannibal end up in Mason Verger's, like, meat rack. Like, but
can we talk about Mason Verger? Like, that guy is the weirdest character. Last season, okay, I have to talk about this, because this still, every time I see that guy, that character, I think of that scene where, in the second season, where he literally, Hannibal drugs this character, Mason Verger, and he literally eats his own face.
For a show this dark and this, like, dreamy and weird, that was maybe one of the funniest moments of any TV show, where he's cutting off his own face and eating it. And he turns to, I forget, it was it Will was in the room or something. He turns to him and he goes, "I'm full of myself." And I was
Literally, this is a character who literally, Hannibal drugs him, he eats his own face, and then his face regrafted on, like, with some new skin to sort of cover up the fact that he ate himself.
And to cover up the fact that they recast
him. And that's what I'm getting to, is that they recast this character with a different actor, which is fine, because the whole bottom half, basically from the nose down, the whole bottom half of this character's face is disfigured, and you can't really tell that it's a different actor unless you really, you know, if that really bothers you. I mean, it's...
One of my favorite scenes from this season was the opening to, I believe, episode 4. I don't remember the names. They're all, like, Italian food names.
Yeah.
But it was the one where Dr. Chilton, the guy who owns the psych ward where Will was and where he wanted to get Hannibal to, like, study him because Hannibal's crazy or whatever.
Right.
The guy who I guess we thought was dead, but Fuller said in interviews that he wasn't, so, like...
Yeah, I didn't realize that there was actually... People had already kind of figured out that he wasn't dead beforehand. So it was kind of a surprise.
Fuller had said something in the past.
For me, when he showed up alive.
But regardless, the scene between him and Mason was one of my favorite scenes. I think I backed it up the moment that I watched it and watched it again, where they're basically undressing for each other. Like, he takes out his eye and, like, his plate in his mouth,
in
and,
his
like,
cheek,
his,
yeah.
his face just droops, and he's like, and Mason takes off his mask and shows, like, his
scarred face
and just the way he's healing, and they're basically both just like, this is what Hannibal did to us, we gotta catch him. And you're just, it was amazing. And then it just cuts to the credits, and you're like, wow! Like, I just love that a show can have something like this happen. Because describing that out of context is amazing, that there's even a show like this. Like, this man ate his own face on broadcast television on a Thursday night.
On NBC. Literally, and it's the scene is like kind of it obstructs the view, like in shadow a little bit.
Yeah, a little.
But not like, it's really disturbing, and that scene really stuck with me.
So
anyway, that character is bizarre. But
let's talk about last week's episode. Give me a couple theories. How do you think that they ended up? How do you think that they went from Hannibal putting a buzzsaw into Will's head?
And they were, where were they? Were they? They were still in Italy.
They were
right?
in Italy.
Yeah.
And Jack had showed up. And Jack, I guess, was drugged too.
Right.
At the table.
So Hannibal apparently likes to drug people now and like mess with them while they're drugged. That's like been a thing that he's done recently. But yeah, I don't know.
But for all we know, he could have been doing that to Will the whole first season, the way Will was.
I mean,
acting.
I guess I would have to guess that, what is that girl's name? I already forgot her name.
The one weakness of this season, I would think, that the one who was childhood, like, is she Hannibal's sister, Hannibal's friend? The Asian girl, what is her name?
Oh,
what's you're thinking of someone else.
What's the main, the one that slept
Jillian
with
Anderson?
Hannibal? No, the one that slept with Hannibal, that works for the FBI.
Oh, freaking...
What is her character's name? Why can't I think of this?
Oh my gosh. Alana Bloom.
Alana Bloom. That's who I was thinking of. First of all...
So you how do you think she would have had to do with this?
I don't know. I think she... I don't know. I guess we're gonna... I'm assuming we're gonna find out, but I'm thinking that maybe she figured out... some
but
stuff
given
about,
that this
where,
is a,
about where they were, because she's working with Mason Verger, and
right.
so, like,
given that this is a show that took us basically 4 episodes to tell us who survived the end of the massacre from last season, I don't know how soon we're going to really know how they wound up back in America, but it was definitely, like, a shock when all of a sudden you're like, they're both alive back in...
Yeah, and where's Jack?
Or is Will alive? Was that just, I don't know. Was that supposed to just be showing that Will was always a part of Hannibal? I don't even know what to make of that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was just such a crazy cut to whatever, Muskrat Farms.
Muskrat Farms.
Gosh.
Mason Verger, the weirdest character on television.
That is a show that I am so sad possibly only has 6 more episodes ever.
Well, we could talk about that really fast. Yeah, I really liked this show. I was surprised by how much I liked it. I watched the first 2 seasons on Amazon Prime right before the third season premiered. And it's just so different from everything else, and it's kind of just its own unique thing.
It's just sad that there's not going to be anything like this anymore, because there's nothing
true.
Even close to
but this. I feel like, I don't know if you've ever really watched another Brian Fuller show, but Pushing Daisies... got canceled after 2 seasons. I don't even think I watched all the episodes necessarily that aired. I took a class at Santa Fe where we were like studying film, and the teacher showed us the pilot again of Pushing Daisies, and I hadn't seen it in a while. And that's like one of the best pilots I think I've ever seen. It's just, I think Brian Fuller he just has this weird, unique way of just approaching things and just making things unlike anything else. And I guess it should be encouraging that he has another show that's coming.
Stars, right?
It's going to be on Stars. I guess it's called American Gods. Is that the name of it?
Right.
And it's an adaptation of a Neil Gaiman novel.
Which I haven't read, but what I understand is it's basically, it takes things that America idolizes and turns them into real characters. Have you looked into this?
I haven't really looked.
I think I remember.
Because I don't get Stars, so I'm like, that'll be something I won't watch for years because I'll never be able to see it.
Effectively, what I understood from it is, like, let's say people, you know, love football or something, and then there's like is a football god, and like it's a character. That's what I understood from it.
There's, interesting,
but I haven't read the book, so
that's
obviously if that's wrong, I'm terribly
point
sorry.
The point I'm making is that Brian Fuller is the definition of an auteur. Like he, I mean, this show is completely different from Pushing Daisies. I think he did a show called Dead Like Me. Basically, all of his shows get canceled, and I almost feel like it's because they're just, I don't want to say they're too good, but they're too specific, and they're too unique. Like, they're very niche.
Well,
because
even Hannibal is a show that I love, and I would almost recommend to no one, because
yeah.
It's just so gross and scary.
And dark, like, and weird.
And it's like, I love it, but I just would totally understand if people hate it,
yeah.
Because it's just, it's not really for everyone.
So, before we talk about the possibility of more Hannibal, someone saving it, resurrecting it, or what have you, does it frustrate you at all that, for the most part, there are people who die on this show, but does it frustrate you that they fake kill people so much? Because that's starting to kind of annoy me a little bit, like, they keep kind of throwing in, like, oh, this person's dead. Well, Dr. Chilton's a perfect example. Everybody that we thought was dead at the end of the second season. So it's like, effectively, no one dies on this show, technically. I mean, it's no one that we really care about. So, like,
but it's
is
such
that
a small
just, like,
cast that there's such a small core group of people that doesn't bother me. Because, like, you need Will, you need Hannibal, you need Jack to have the show. I mean, you could probably live with just Will and Hannibal. For them to kill off Alana, I think people, I guess it would have been okay, but that's really the only other person. I mean, Abigail died in the
yeah, she
thing.
Did die.
It doesn't really bother me. I mean, the show is so out there and dreamy anyway that, like, I don't put a whole lot of investment in the logic of it all anyway. I'm just kind of like, I just love watching it. Like, because I've seen a lot of people complaining this season on the internet where they're like, oh, they would be doing a manhunt for Hannibal around the world. There's no way he could live so calmly. And like, I'm like, who cares? Like, I mean,
yeah.
I know the show kind of calls itself to it a couple times where it's like, it tries to make excuses for why.
Right.
But, it's one of those things that doesn't bother me.
I mean, this show is definitely not going for realism in any way. It's, you know,
surrealism.
It's super stylistic. Yeah, very, very surreal moments. So what is your takeaway? Brian Fuller said at the Comic-Con panel, the Hannibal Comic-Con panel, that there's a strong possibility that they're going to wrap up this version of Hannibal on the big screen. Is that something that you would like to see, or do you think
I would be there. I would be there opening night, probably the next night and the next night after that. But yeah, I think that's the best possibility at this point because, I mean, it got canceled. They've now released the actors from their contracts.
Both
American Gods,
Netflix and Amazon have both passed on it.
American Gods has taken first position for Fuller now. I think the only way we're going to see any more of it is if it's in a feature form.
Yeah.
But they also apparently don't have the rights to do that yet in a feature form.
Mm.
And they also don't have the rights to Silence of the Lambs, which was a big hullabaloo in the earlier seasons. I can't believe I just used the word hullabaloo.
Yeah.
But
that was,
but yeah,
that was a thing that people were concerned about, I guess.
That seems
even
like
going into a potential fourth season,
right.
Fuller maybe commented that he wanted to use the character of Clarice Starling.
But that seems like the only way it's going to happen is probably through a feature film.
I just hope
I'm just going to enjoy these last six episodes, and it's probably going to go down as one of my favorite shows ever, and I'll just have these three seasons to
three
watch over and
seasons.
Over.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that I saw on Twitter the other day that Brian Fuller tried to assure fans that like they crafted a pretty definitive ending for the third season. So if this is the ending, it's not going to be open ended. It's not going to be disappointing. There'll be some sort of closure to most of the, you know, character arcs and storylines. I think so.
Let's get to the new stuff.
Hannibal airs on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. on NBC. Watch it. It's not for the faint of heart, but it's really good. All right, on to some new shows that are premiering for the first time this summer. This is something I'm really excited to talk about because
I don't think we've actually talked about this.
We've talked about it a little bit. There are two shows that I think we're both watching that we're both really look forward to that are completely unlikely in both content, titles, network that they air on. We're talking about Unreal on Lifetime, and then eventually, after we talk about Unreal for a little bit, we'll get to Mr. Robot on USA.
Let me just start by saying that if you told me a year ago, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, that I would be watching a show on Lifetime and enjoying it and wanting to watch the next one, I would have told you, no, you're crazy.
Right.
This show, I mean, talk a little bit about this show. It's crazy. It's amazing.
This show, Unreal, I think there have been six episodes that have aired. This is the first season. It airs on Lifetime Monday nights. So
I believe this is also a 10-episode season.
As far as I can tell, this is new episode tonight.
When we're recording this.
This show is so much fun. There's no other way to describe it. There are great performances on this show. It's funny. It's also gets really dark. It's basically a scripted Lifetime drama, hour-long drama, about the making of basically a Bachelor-type reality show.
Everlasting.
It's basically The Bachelor, but the title on Unreal is Everlasting. It's almost like making fun of it, and also kind of... It's weird how they kind of handle it. Like, it almost is like maybe they're trying to make you think about the way that you watch reality TV and how much people are manipulated and...
Which has been done before on television, but just the performances in this show and, like, the entertainment value of it is so high that it's kind of a high to watch it.
And it's weird because it's not even a situation where it's like, oh, it's so bad it's good, or it's like, I think you described it last week when we talked as like a guilty pleasure, but
yeah,
I would almost just say that it's just a pleasure.
Yeah,
without the guilt.
Because there's not really...
It's really good.
And, I mean, one of the creators...
Sarah Gertrude Shapiro, yeah. And then,
she worked on The Bachelor, so
right.
I guess she would have some kind of insight into how these things work.
And the other showrunner, Marty Noxon, has a lot of other TV credits, right? Like, she worked on some episodes of Glee, maybe some episodes of Mad Men, I think she wrote. So
there might be some credence, or some, you know...
Yeah, and that's something that I think... Some people will want to debate that and be like, well, this show just isn't realistic. And my take on that would just be like, I don't care. Even if it's very far removed from how these shows are actually made, like,
I mean,
it doesn't really matter.
Let's talk about the main attraction, because Shiri Appleby is amazing in this show. She plays the lead character, Rachel, who is effectively like the magic man producer who can get people to do whatever they need them to do, and she kind of has this storyline of someone who is a little conflicted about doing the thing she's doing and had some kind of giant emotional breakdown.
And this season prior, like this season of the fictional show the year before, she had some sort of breakdown and kind of... She left the show, basically, and she's coming back to work because she's being blackmailed, right, by her boss?
Sort of, right? I don't even remember why. Some sort of
legal trouble, like they were going
to
sue her,
Yeah, they were going to sue her, but yeah, so she's good at her job, but she's hesitant on, like, doing it.
Describe what you mean by good at her job.
Good at her job.
Maybe give the listeners a taste of what she might do in a typical episode of Unreal.
Let's say good at her job in the sense that she can convince a grown lesbian woman to lose her virginity to the bachelor on the show just by the way that she... it's interesting. I don't know if people are really really that easy to manipulate, but like basically you watch her and she can get people to say what she wants them to say for the cameras. She can basically induce cat fights at will.
Right. Right, so the tagline of the show, I think, is bad people, it takes bad people to make good TV, or something along those lines.
The photo says everyone will be exposed.
And basically, I read a tagline somewhere that was like, bad people making good TV, or... So, like, that essentially, like, all they want to do, each episode of Unreal, the characters are producing an episode of Everlasting. So they have different scenarios, they have, you know, dates, group dates, and they kind of, they capture a bunch of different sort of aspects of the show. They capture the off-camera relationship between some of the girls. You follow Rachel, Shiri Appleby's character around. She's doing just a whole number of different things. They're trying to create scenarios in which they capture drama on, you know, on the show. And, The Bachelor character that they have, what is his name, Adam? You know, it's weird because at first this guy's kind of an ass, but I think that they kind of want you to like him now, especially after I think it was the fifth episode where they deal with Faith and they, you know, she admits that she's a lesbian.
Deal with Faith, literally.
Deal with Faith, literally. She admits that she's a lesbian and she's supposed to be on this date with Adam, and they want her for the sake of television to give up her virginity, quote unquote, because
right.
She says she's. But basically, they get her to confess on camera. They convince her that she should confess on camera that she's a lesbian and that she has feelings for her best friend. And then they basically change their mind when they realize that if it gets out, that everyone in Faith's small town is going to just completely persecute her and.
And then Rachel...
It's gonna be just miserable. So then they do everything they can to bury the footage that they've captured.
Well, because Rachel effectively finds her good side and is like, she's not ready for this, etc. And you kind of see, like, because there's a spin to everything Rachel does where she or the characters, or maybe even you, can perceive it in a way where they really are doing the best thing for them. But how does it open with her? She's laying at the bottom of a limo with, like, five of the contestants sitting around her, and her shirt says, "This is what a feminist looks like." Basically, she thinks she's helping people a lot of the time, I think. I know sometimes she knows that she's not, but...
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, they kind of... It's tricky... It's weird. You're watching her work, and you think that she is maybe being genuine, but then you also see moments where she's not being genuine and she's just manipulating people. So you're trying to kind of always figure out and guess, like, what she's really up to and, like, what her motivation is.
I'm realizing that I can talk about this show forever because it's just so entertaining. But let's talk about last week's because I'm a little worried.
Let's talk about this now.
Before tonight's comes on, I guess. I'm a little worried. I guess we got to see how they handle it in the aftermath, but... This is a show that I've just really enjoyed watching, that has been a lot of fun, and last week just took a dark, dark turn. Like,
yeah.
Not effectively, one of the contestants kills herself at the end.
I mean, at least that's what I'm assuming. I don't know
how she
would live through that,
but... She jumps off of the mansion and just is bleeding out.
Right, so they have this whole episode that focuses on this character, Mary, right?
Mary.
Is that her name? And she is basically, they peg her in the beginning. She's an older character. She has kids, you know, with her ex-husband.
Who was violent.
Yeah,
her.
So her backstory, like, as a contestant is, you know, that her ex-husband was violent towards her. She has a child. Does she have a child or two childs? Two children.
Two childs.
Two childs.
I can't remember. I think she has one.
She has just one kid.
I think she has one.
But she basically, you know, comes in and the producers of Everlasting want to just peg her as, like, the old mother type.
The cougar.
Going for the young bachelor. And so they give her an entire episode where
she has a family date with Adam.
Adam, the bachelor character, they introduce... Man, I can't talk today. She introduces him to her kid, and the whole episode kind of focuses on her. And I guess we get the sense that she might be bipolar, right? She's been on medicine.
Right, and the closest thing the show has had to a villain at this point, what's her name? Shia? Is it Shia? The girl who stole her medicine and stopped, like, basically she's becoming bipolar again because she doesn't have her medicine.
So that did she put something else in her medicine?
She just put sugar.
Like, it was like probiotics, I think. Something like that.
It was just something
harmless.
Yeah, something like a placebo, basically.
Yeah, so she messes with her medicine and fills her capsules. So this character Mary is off her bipolar medicine for several days at the point of this family
date. And this is the thing that makes me hesitant is the kind of the character growth of Rachel throughout the season and the way they present. What's the producer's name? Constance.
Man, why can't
Quinn.
I think
Quinn.
Of anything. Yeah, Quinn.
Okay, so Constance Zimmer, who plays Quinn, and then Chet, who is played by Craig Bierko. He's like the owner, basically.
He's the worst part of the show, basically.
Either him
we'll
or.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Either him or either him or Jeremy, the Rachel's ex, whatever. More or less, though, they kind of abandon a little bit what they had grown, or at least Rachel does. She kind of abandons the way she'd grown through the show to literally bring in Mary's ex-husband, the domestic abuser, and effectively drive her to suicide. And even in the moment where she's about to jump off of the roof, or if she might, Quinn is sitting there like, oh, do we have a camera on it? Do we have a camera on her? And you're like...
Yeah.
You're like, okay, like, I know this is a show, but this is someone who's about to kill herself. I like to think that people would...
Care more?
Care a little more.
Yeah.
Especially, like, you would think Rachel was above that at this point. I want to see how it plays out.
Right.
And
that's the thing, is that was the end of the episode, and we don't really see the aftermath yet until we see tonight's episode.
But it felt a little dishonest, the way that Rachel acted.
It did. That's fair to say, I think.
But the main thing that worried me about it was, like, once you go down this road, you can't really come back. And, I mean, maybe they're trying to just make a larger point about reality shows, which, if it goes the direction it looks like it's going, it's probably a point that's already been made about reality shows. But this was just a show that I've enjoyed watching so much, and on a selfish level, I don't want it to get all dark. I also don't know if they can handle it being dark. I don't know if it'll be as good. But, I mean, you know, it's only 10 episodes. I'm in for the next 4.
Yeah,
whatever.
It would just be a shame if it just kind of, the quality just kind of dropped off, like,
especially
right in the midway point of the first season.
Because the day of the last episode, they announced that there's going to be a second season.
Second
which,
season renewal.
Do you just do the same thing again with new characters? I don't know what a second season would look like, but I've really enjoyed this show, and I hope that it...
Yeah,
I don't want to say bounces back, but I hope that it bounces back. Like,
interestingly, I don't think that... I think every show that we're going to talk about today is completely different from one another. I mean, there are no similarities between Hannibal, Halt and Catch Fire, Unreal, and Mr. Robot. They're not alike in content, tone, style,
form.
Really, I mean, so I think for me, I'm just excited that we have so much diversity of content, and that there's just so much that's just feels different, and there's definitely nothing like this show that I'm watching, and it is so entertaining. You mentioned to me, I had read a bunch of critics I follow on Twitter were all talking about it, and then you mentioned to me that you had really liked it, and so I watched, before last week's episode, I watched all of them that had aired, I guess the first 5, or are there 6, or how
six.
Many have aired?
There's been 6.
6 have aired. So I watched the first 6 basically in one day.
Episode is called Savior.
Oh boy. it's and I'm being for real when I say this. This show is really good and it's really entertaining. It has a few things that don't quite work. Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, I'm not really feeling the Chet character played by Craig Bierko. It's not even his plot line that bothers me, it's just like he just doesn't seem to fit what the rest of the show is doing, I think. It just always feels out of place when we get to his scenes. But it's just, the show is really original. I've never seen anything that's really like it in terms of... I don't watch reality TV. I don't ever really have a desire to watch reality TV, but I think this just captures something. It's like we all pretend that we don't like it. I pretend that I don't like it, but I would probably find it really entertaining to actually watch an episode of The Bachelor. I've never, especially if it's anything like this Everlasting show on this show, Unreal. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know if it's going to be able to be good if we get we're getting a second season. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep it going. But it's just so much its own thing. And I'm also just baffled by the fact that I'm genuinely excited to watch a show that's on Lifetime. I mean,
I think that's a good segue, because I'm baffled that I'm genuinely excited to watch a show on USA, and that it's unlike anything else on TV. Let's talk about Mr. Robot.
I'm gonna just put this out there straight up. Of all the things I've watched this entire summer, I mean, I caught up with the third season of Orange is the New Black, been watching Hannibal, all these other things we've mentioned, trying to, you know, fit some summer movies in there. Of all the things I think I've watched this summer, this may be my favorite.
This
may be my favorite thing that's I'm currently watching, just in terms of how thrilling I find it, and exciting, and it's just like, so far I don't really have anything to complain about. I'm genuinely always interested in seeing where it goes next. And I think it just is doing things that most shows don't do. And it's also on USA, which is a network I've never watched. I don't watch Burn Notice. I don't watch White Collar. I don't watch Suits.
Which I'm sure are fine. I
want to knock people who watch those shows. I just have never spent the time. But this is nothing like those shows. I guarantee it. But you want to talk a little bit about, like, the premise of it, or what were you going to say? I'm kind of speechless when it comes to this show, because
I was going
to
say, I was talking earlier about having shows that I really just look forward to watching, and this has quickly become one of them. Like, I heard about it when it first started, and I kind of thought, you know, I'm watching so much stuff right now, this doesn't sound like really like it's worth the time, but then pretty much the day of the second episode, I was just around the internet, and I thought, you know, let me just watch the pilot, see if I like the pilot, which, for as good as the show is, the pilot was way too long. It was like 1 hour and 6 minutes, but regardless, I watched the pilot, and I was like, I really enjoyed that, and I want to watch another one, and there was another one later that night, so I watched another one, and then I watched the third one last week, and the interesting thing to me is, like, time just flew during the third one. I watched it, and I mean, I watched it on DVR, so I'm just getting ready to skip through the commercials, and the commercials seemed like they were coming every 2 minutes. I was like, man, was that a short segment? And then I look at the time, like, oh, wow, that was 10 minutes. Oh, wow, that was another 15 minutes. Like, the show just flies by, and I think we should maybe give a short description of what it is, but I think the show flies by because Rami Malek? Let's mispronounce his name for 5 minutes.
I don't know.
The lead in the show, who plays Elliot, who was on The Pacific, which I haven't seen, but I've heard he was great in that, the miniseries on HBO.
Sidebar. FX, yesterday on FX, they were showing one of the Twilight movies. I couldn't tell you which one it was, but he is in them.
Oh, well, there you go.
I just thought that was interesting. Also, Lee Pace is also in the same one.
Rami Malek is in Twilight. But he's amazing in this show. Like, this show takes a lot of things. I think Alan Sepinwall pointed this out in his initial review of the show, is that it takes a lot of things that are, like, cliche and worn out in a lot of shows and makes them really fascinating. Like, it's got the voiceover and, you know, the rogue, like, programmer, and, like, he wants to upend corporations and society, but, like, if you just told it to me, like, that way, it doesn't sound as interesting, I guess, or as intoxicating, which I think is a word I've already used today, but it's just fascinating. Like, basically, here, the short description, I'll just read the IMDb description. Follows a young computer programmer who suffers from social anxiety disorder and forms connections through hacking, is recruited by a mysterious anarchist. Reading that out loud, I'm not even sure that was a complete sentence, or that didn't sound right, but
no, it makes sense, though. But yeah, so that actually boils it down pretty nicely, I think.
So yeah, he effectively wants to, I don't know, he wants society to be in anarchy.
So yeah, you've seen Fight Club, right?
Okay.
I've heard a lot of comparisons to
Fight
Club.
Let's hold off on the Fight Club comparison, because we could talk about Christian Slater a little bit if we talk about Fight Club.
Okay.
But I mean, basically, he is, I don't really know what his disorder is, but he effectively...
Yeah, they haven't really gone into it too
much. He effectively,
much.
Like, talks to the audience as, like, his imaginary friend. I don't know what he's... It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're not really sure.
Maybe we'll find that out, too.
But this is the thing. We're not really sure about anything.
So he's talking, and he'll just go on, and he'll be like... He had that great montage last week where he was just like, oh, I'll go to Starbucks and I'll watch those stupid Avengers movies and whatever.
Yeah.
And or Marvel movies or whatever he said. And he is just, his voiceovers are interesting because the way he delivers them, the way he looks at the world is different. Like, it's just, it's different. The creator, Sam Esmail, name I can't pronounce.
Sam Esmail.
So he, from what I understand, wanted to make this a feature film.
Yeah, I heard this too.
And
I guess the script got really long.
Like, he just kept writing. Really long. And they were like, this can't be a movie. And he was like, they were like, just make it a TV show. And he said, okay, we'll make it a TV show. And from an interview I read, I believe he said the whole first season, which I think is also 10 episodes, which I guess is the trend these days.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
I think he said the first season is basically the first act of what the feature would have been. So basically, at the moment, for those who have or haven't watched it, he's just... And I'll just say as he presents it, because there's a lot of questions about this, but basically he joins this F Society hacker group to try to take down big evil corporations from the inside. He even calls, and this is an interesting
way for them to show a lot.
Interesting way for them to show the way his mind works and the way that the show is presented to be a little untrustworthy. The fact that him and all the other characters refer to this big corporation as Evil Corp.
Even though its name is just E-Corp?
Yeah, like, its name, I believe, is just E-Corp.
E-Corp, and they established this in the first episode that Elliot works for a cybersecurity company called AllSafe, and one of AllSafe's major clients is E-Corp, this huge conglomerate, and Elliot, in the first episode, refers to it as Evil Corp, other time that it's mentioned in the show, it's now referred to as Evil Corp. And there's just no way that people would just call it that. I think that that's supposed to be us hearing, because even when he watches the news, you know, the news anchors will say Evil Corp or whatever. There
like,
was
this
a hack
is a show
at Evil Corp.
Where you don't really ever know who or what is real.
Right.
And it's that's why I wanted to talk about Fight Club.
Right.
Because Fight Club, one of my favorite movies from when 99 or whenever that was. Basically, I don't want to spoil Fight Club for people.
But, it's been a while.
But
get over it.
But basically, the main characters, one of them turns out to be, what's the word? And a vision of the other main character. Like, he's not real. I can't think of the word to describe someone like that. But basically, Brad Pitt in Fight Club is like a hallucination.
Yeah, he's like, or like a split personality of Edward Norton's character.
Right. So
that may be the case with
and that's the
Mr.
thing with
Robot.
Christian Slater on Mr. Robot is the title character. He's Mr. Robot as far as we know him.
Well, yeah, he just wears a jacket that says Mr. Robot, which, by the way, is kind of a stupid title, which is another reason why you probably are like, I don't want to watch this show. But
regardless, you're never really sure whether he's a figment of Elliot's imagination or whether he's real. Like, even the second episode, and like I said, even if I'm spoiling this, you should go watch it, because it's amazing. But the second episode that ends with him pushing, I'm doing air quotes, him pushing Elliot off of...
Yeah, they're like sitting on the
beach,
there's like a wall, yeah.
Like, you don't know if that's real, you don't... They really play into it in the third episode when they're at the bar, and when Christian Slater visits him at work, and no one ever acknowledges that he's there.
Right.
I have a feeling they're going to leave this up in the air for a while because they know people think that he might not be
But
real.
Here's my thing about it is I don't think that they are trying to pull the wool over our eyes in any way. I think they maybe want us to think that he could be real. I think they want us to be sort of suspended in not really knowing.
Because yeah, I just think
because
that they're
the
not
going to
tell us whether we're right or not.
And I agree with you, but I do think it's funny because I've seen some people online complaining, like, this is just too obvious, like, this is really stupid, like, it's so obvious that Mr. Robot isn't real. But I don't think that they're trying to hide that fact necessarily. I think they want us to pick up on it immediately and then wonder whether he's real or not real, because it could go either
way.
Right,
and no offense, but I think that's a dumb criticism for people to say that that makes the show worse, for it to be obvious that he's not real. Because, for one, so if he's not, what, like, how does that make the show worse? And it's not like they're pretending he's one thing or the other really strong. It's not like they're leaning really strongly either way. I think I would like to think he's not real, because I think that would make the show more interesting.
Yeah.
For me, because I don't think Mr. Robot as a character is particularly well defined, really. At least so far.
Christian Slater's doing a pretty good job with what he's given, but it's kind of, every scene is a little bit repetitive, maybe. That maybe is something I would complain about. Those scenes between Elliot and Mr. Robot are pretty, they're all pretty similar. Nothing really develops that much from them, but Christian Slater is just kind of, he's kind of hamming it up and kind of giving us like a wired, weird kind of, you know,
and I guess
interesting character.
I guess we should mention Elliot knows pretty much everything about everyone. Because whenever he meets someone,
he
hacks into their Facebook or their email or whatever and just learns everything about them. I was going to say that the opening was when he met his childhood friend's boyfriend and exposed him as a cheater or whatever.
Yeah.
But the opening was when he went to that coffee shop and he exposed the owner as like a child pornography owner and
hoarding.
Yeah, and basically he just does that with everyone, and it's interesting the way that they portray that. It's kind of like jittery and like he's on morphine in the show.
Morphine addict.
But he pretends he's not a morphine addict.
Right. The show's pretty dark, surprisingly. I think I'm surprised it is fun.
It's like really entertaining. I just really look forward to it every week.
It's visually appealing. It has really interesting ideas. The performances, I mean, nobody's really bad on this show.
Rami Malek 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 is
this kid is amazing.
Fantastic.
He's amazing.
He is so good.
And the show would absolutely not work if it was someone else.
Anyone else. I can't imagine working with anyone else. He makes the narration interesting. He makes, you know, the social anxiety disorder / we don't know what's wrong with him.
Right.
Like, slightly crazy.
Because there's
like,
so much...
He makes that interesting when it could easily just be another one of those characters.
There's so much that could be about this show that could fall flat or feel really stupid. And that's something that I will say, that the show does not feel stupid. It seems, if you describe it to someone, you're like, oh, it's hackers and they want to take down this corporation. Like, that alone kind of sounds dumb.
I will say, as someone who watched, and I kind of regret this, as someone who watched all three seasons of House of Cards, I guess really only the first two are relevant to this comment, but why Michael Gill is in any show is beyond me, because he's a cardboard box, man. When he was the president in House of Cards, I was just like, it was the most boring character on anything. And now he's Elliot's boss on this show. And, like, he's just, I don't even know, like, I mean, he had a funny line last week where they were like, was he drinking Starbucks or whatever? But he's just like, I'm not a huge fan of him.
I don't mind that guy.
I mean, he's fine.
He's not good on, definitely not that good
I mean,
on
he's,
House of Cards.
Yeah, House of Cards is rough. Like, he's fine.
But it's kind
he's
of
fine
just
on
like,
this show,
they
but
made
like,
that character
it, that character is
insufferable.
But even the Mr. Robot character is just kind of a blank slate to me. I feel like he's kind of just there to be the one who, like, maybe finds out that Elliot didn't fully delete the hack that they fixed in the first episode.
Right.
I mean, he's certainly not as well-defined as the female characters have been. Darlene? Angela? Angela is the childhood friend.
She's really good. I like
her.
She's in Her. Isn't she in Her?
She is who's
the surrogate.
Right, who doesn't talk and Samantha talks through her.
Yeah, which Her is a great movie, by the way. off topic, but I recognized her in the first episode. I was like, I'm pretty sure she has that one scene in Her.
Right.
Because I've never seen her in anything else.
But yeah, so, I mean, this is just a great show that I'm looking forward to see how it keeps going.
And it'll be interesting to see how long it kind of maintains its quality and kind of doesn't, I don't know, either jump the shark or just get...
I gotta think, though, as long as they have...
Bored?
As long as they have him playing Elliot, I'm gonna be watching it, because...
Yeah,
I
mean...
I'm entranced by him. I think he's great. The last episode was the first time that they even showed another character...
For an extended period of time.
Yeah.
With that guy is also pretty impressive. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, so
of the actor.
Yeah, what did you think of that storyline with him, like, uses people, like, there's something with his wife who's into weird kinky stuff. I don't know what was happening.
Yeah, so he has a pregnant wife, right? And then he goes home to her, and she, the whole, that was kind of a, that scene was a little, like, strange, just because I was like, I'm not sure what we're supposed to take away from this. But,
I feel like almost they were trying to,
I feel like we learned nothing, though. Like, he did something with that guy's phone, that guy that he slept with, but we didn't really see what it was or why, like, who that other guy is and why he wanted to mess with his phone.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that they're
out down the road.
Planting a seed. So, like,
what about
in that
him putting
in that
on
way,
gloves and beating up a homeless guy and then paying him? Like, there was
I
just,
don't know.
They definitely just didn't really tell us a lot about him, but hinted at, like...
Right.
It's almost like one of those he's the man with secrets thing, but, like, the performance was interesting enough that you're
He's kind of just... I don't know. I was magnetized towards him because he kind of is just an interesting-looking person.
Yeah.
And he does kind of seem like... He has that... This may be kind of offensive, but he has that, like, villainous look. Like, you just look at him and you're just like, ah, that guy's probably up to no good. So,
I mean, an episode opens with him looking in the mirror, practicing a speech to his boss, and just, like, hitting himself, and...
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
It's... There's a lot of interesting things about this show, and we've only seen 3 episodes, and I think that it'll be really interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, so Wednesday nights.
Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. On USA, of all places. It's really good. It's a really good show. It might be my favorite thing that's currently on. I mean, I'm enjoying a lot of other stuff, but I just... The idea of this show building on what it's already started and potentially only getting better... And delivering more episodes. I mean, the pilot was amazing. And the 2 subsequent episodes have been really good. But, I mean, the pilot was just, you know, our introduction to this world and to these characters. And I was very drawn to it.
It's been a great summer for TV, man.
Great summer. Before we go, you want to talk maybe a little bit about something you're looking forward to? This one specific thing, either TV or movie-wise, that you're looking forward to for the rest of the summer?
I don't know if there's another TV show that I'm waiting anxiously for. I mean, Fear the Walking Dead is going to happen. I guess, I don't know if I'm even going to watch it. I mean, I don't watch the normal Walking Dead. I don't, I can't think of anything in particular. I have like 4 more shows. I'm basically just trying to catch up on everything before fall, and I'll be ready to just keep up and start new things. Like I just watched I just watched Top of the Lake from a few years ago. I just finished The Honorable Woman.
Oh, you finished it?
I've heard that's
really good. Is it good?
Good. Yeah, it was. I guess it's a really interesting political spy thriller kind of thing. I think for me, like any miniseries, it kind of is one of those things where the first few episodes are really like heavy on trying to catch you up on what's happening.
Right.
And then the way it comes together in the last few is really good. I watched the last 3 just back to back to back. It was pretty fascinating. But yeah, and I'm gonna probably watch Black Mirror.
I watched an episode of that.
I'm gonna watch
because there was one because you know every episode has like its own plot, like it's like an anthology. So I watched one of the ones from the second season, and it was really good.
I'm going
to
finish...
It was recommended to me because it sort of is similar to humans.
I'm going
to
finish The Jinx. I still haven't seen all that.
So behind
all
that stuff.
I'm just catching up on a few things. I still haven't seen Transparent or You're the Worst. I'll probably try to watch those.
Yeah, both of those are really good.
I feel like movie-wise, I mean, I just saw Mad Max last night for the second time, third-ish time. I think that's...
I mean,
probably the highlight.
What more is there to say?
Go watch Mad Max.
Mad Max is awesome. If you're looking for a good summer movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it. If you saw it, see it again. But yeah, that'll probably wrap it up for today. You're on Twitter, right? What's your Twitter handle?
@GainesTaylor. Just my name in reverse.
And I can't remember mine. Just mine. I don't ever really look at it. @Fox, I don't know. I'll add that.
Twitter's
in.
Important, man.
I'll add that in later. I do read it a lot. I just don't know my own Twitter handle. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and hopefully, as the summer winds down and I get into more of a routine with school in the fall, I'll try to have a tighter schedule on these and do 1 a week or 1 every other week. Yeah, that'll be it for today.